Welcome to Busy Research, the podcast where business meets data and insights drive success. I'm your host, Vicki McCarthy, director of the Center for Applied Business Research at Austin Peay State University. On this podcast, we get busy learning about how applied business research can improve business decision making. On today's episode of Busy Research, we're talking about the fascinating world of architecture and design with a special guest, an expert in commercial architecture. We'll be exploring the challenges and trends facing this dynamic industry. Please join me in welcoming our guest, Laura Clary, founder and president of iDesign Solutions, LLC. Thank you for being with us today, Laura. Could you start out telling our listeners a bit about yourself and your experience in the commercial architectural industry?
Of course, Vicki. I've worked in commercial architecture for over 30 years. My expertise lies in the planning and design of scientific facilities, and more precisely, laboratories, for which we do work for the federal government, higher education, commercial clients, and the healthcare market sectors. I've had the opportunity to work in new construction and renovation projects for a wide range. They can be as small as a $35,000 modification to a lab for a scanning electron microscope to a $1 billion project for a new campus for the Department of Energy.
Wow, that is very exciting. And it sounds like you have some big projects out there too. What are some of the current challenges that architects and professionals in this field?
So again, having a specialty, it depends on building type. So in my world for scientific facilities, it's really optimization of resources. It's one of the most expensive building types. It's also one of the most expensive to operate. So trying to balance, you know, first cost with life cycle and operational costs is really challenging and is also very much driven by owner goals and budgets and considerations for the future and sustainability. So I describe it as the challenges, resiliency and design, particularly in the context of rapid changing technology, methodologies, and even programs. My clients' programs will change. They might be working on something for the next 6 months, and then the whole program changes and the emphasis changes and the equipment changes. And how can they respond to that without having to renovate every time there's a change? These challenges often require innovative solutions, providing flexibility and agility while minimizing their operational impacts, as well as just the, like I said, you don't want to renovate each time and generate a bunch of dust and corrupt all this expensive equipment that the scientists work with.
Well, let's talk more about technology because it is rapidly evolving and impacts various industries. So how are technological advancements shaping the landscape of commercial architecture and what trends are emerging as a result?
Okay, so I'm going to respond by focusing a little bit more on architectural context and what we do in our office, because technology does play a pivotal role in our industry, both in our tools as well as how those could apply even to the construction side. From the use of building information technology, which is how we create our ideas, generate visualizations and concepts that we share with the client as we develop the project and develop in greater and greater detail, to provide some virtual reality simulations, which the clients love. It really helps accelerate the process. It allows for a very collaborative engagement. For example, when we work with 3D models, we'll do it in a meeting. And as you know, the client gives us feedback, we're able to respond right there in the meeting, make changes, test new ideas. And that leads to being able to arrive at a solution that they're not only comfortable with, but have some ownership. And it really accelerates the process significantly. So it's just a tremendously powerful tool. Also, there's other trends, it's the computational power and additional kinds of tools and resources are available allow us to do energy performance modeling, accelerated project delivery, and even 3D printed models for an additional level of visualization. And it's just totally revolutionizing how we approach design and construction. And even pushing that forward, I have a client where we were working with our 3D modeling capability with the concept of doing 3D printed development locally, utilizing a gigantic 3D printer that would use a concrete mix as its medium. And that would greatly accelerate the construction side from something that might take on average in 8 weeks for a build and be able to complete it in a week. So that's also a significant savings and has tons of potential. The drawback on that currently and being able to move that forward is the cost of the actual concrete printer.
Wow, both virtual reality and the 3D printing technology sound very exciting. And so I almost want to just talk a little bit more about those individually, if I may.
Of course.
And as far as virtual reality, you talked about it being helping with the collaborative process with your clients. What can you kind of give us an example of a case where you were really able to push forward a project using virtual reality? Whereas if you didn't use it, it may have the time may have been a lot longer or more expensive.
Okay, that's a little challenging to answer because we use it on every project.
Okay, fair enough. So it's very common.
It is so important to what we do, and especially because, particularly in the early stages of the project, programming through schematic design and even early design development, we're very much engaged in working with the users. So we're working with scientists. We're not working with, say, the facilities manager or more technical kind of staff. We're literally working with the people that are going to be inhabiting and using the facility. And so they're not trained in our world. These are not things that they relate to. And kind of stepping back to the old school way of doing things with 2D CAD plans, they really have a hard time responding to, what does that mean? Because it's a little bit more, it's not realistic. It's hard for them to translate what would that really mean to them in a space where with our 3D modeling capability, they can relate to it. They know how big their equipment is. They know how big a lab bench is. They know, they're able to kind of envision themselves in the space a little bit easier because we're working with elements they're already familiar with.
So would you say then that the virtual reality technology has replaced the CAD technology, or is it just in addition to it?
I wish it would replace it. It'd make life a little simpler even. In my ideal world would be having that one piece of software that I can take a project from start to finish. It's not quite there yet. So we do work very heavily with the 3D modeling, again, when we're very active in the design phases and very active working with user groups. But then near the end of the design development phase, we shift gears entirely. We've already gotten sign off on the designs. And so now we're focused on who are we communicating with? So then we're communicating with a construction contractor, and they need to have a set of blueprints and specifications in order to actually build that design. And so that method of communication is still old school. We're still producing 2D documentation. So at that point, we do transition from the 3D models to our more traditional 2D plans and details and schedules and such. So we've got a little bit of a hurdle there. It'd be fabulous if more construction contractors were kind of embracing the model as a delivery. But, also I think contractually there's kind of an issue too. There, you know, that 2D print that you send into the city for plan review, and that is being a very tangible deliverable, it is kind of giving it some staying power, where it would be nice if that were to evolve. And I can't predict if and when that will be the case.
Right. So it sounds like you have different technologies for different stakeholders at different stages in planning. Where would you say that then the technology of the 3D printer, where you talked about modeling with concrete materials, is that still in the design process then as you're building that design?
So yeah, that does change that world quite a bit, and does, you know, we probably still have to do the 3D or the 2D documentation for a city plan review. But what is kind of cool about that is we can literally take the model that we developed during the design process and then use that as the input for the concrete printer. So there's no translation, there's no, you know, slicing and dicing. It's, you know, we can go straight from computer to building. That's kind of the exciting aspect of that. And in addition to just the rapid ability to deliver that kind of construction. So that that's a development I'm super excited about. And I really look forward to the future where we can make that happen. And even that's evolving in a neat way. You know, right, the project I'm involved with was looking at concrete, but you know, there are other projects out there where they're looking at recycled, reused wood pulp, for example, in order to create a new material that has more of a characteristic with the look and feel of a wood construction. So it doesn't have to be kind of this cold concrete kind of material either. So, and also finding new ways to express the, I'll call it patterns or you know, materialistic qualities. That also offers a whole new avenue for design. You know, you're now experimenting with really a new texture, new material.
That's very exciting. And it actually is a really good segue into, as you talk about the different materials and reusing certain materials. And then you mentioned sustainability, because sustainable design and green architecture are gaining a lot of prominence. Mm-hmm. So how are architects integrating? And you talked a little bit about this with the materials, but other ways they're integrating sustainability into commercial projects. And how does this or has this impacted the industry?
So for me, it's not new. This really embracing kind of sustainable design principles has been in our industry since the early 2000s. And you're right, it's just a nothing but gain momentum, which is fabulous. And it's really in the realm of kind of voluntary standards now. So we have the U.S. Green Building Council's LEED program, Leadership in Energy and Efficiency in Design. But then there, you know, that was kind of the first spark. That's really what started late 1990s, early 2000s. And then since then, there's been other programs that have also come online, you know, Green Globes, the Well Buildings Program. They all have kind of a little bit different twist, but they, you know, generally are all very much focused on having a more sustainable, responsible approach to design and creating healthier environments. I think some of the challenges is because they are elective. You have some clients that are more savvy and, you know, approach that as an important element in the design when you begin the project, and other clients that aren't as familiar with it or as familiar with the benefits, in which case, you know, then we have a little bit of an educational process. But what's been kind of exciting too is that it's also caught up in our world of building codes, that as our building codes evolve, they're starting to incorporate more and more of these principles as well. So for example, my office is in Michigan, and we now have an energy code, and that has embraced many of these concepts. So, you know, as part of our normal practice, we're doing many of these already. And then as just a again, since this has been an interest of mine, our basic practices, our specifications, we've already incorporated many sustainability principles within them naturally, so that I do feel like whether the client has chosen to pursue a particular program or not, we're still trying, you know, we're still providing them a really good base with sustainable solutions.
Well, and you touch on a really important point, and where you have always stayed ahead of the trend. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be, for businesses that are looking out at the future, they have an advantage, because as the building codes require more sustainable practices, and then maybe government policies are put into place either locally or federally, then it's going to be those firms that already have that in place that will have an advantage when it comes to competing. They won't have to catch up. And before we started this podcast, we talked a little bit about the transition from, going to more of a remote during COVID, where you were forced to more flexible work arrangements, where you were already set up to do that, whereas some architectural mm-hmm. firms weren't necessarily in that mm-hmm. that stage where they could do it and pivot so quickly. So I love how you drive home that point of you're ahead of the trend. So then you're not going mm-hmm. to be behind when these are no longer elective practices. And I see we're kind of on that trajectory right now, where it is going to be more and more just required practices to implement certain sustainable architectural mm-hmm. designs. And I didn't realize LEEDs had been around for as long as they are, because I see, different buildings that have the LEED certification. But it's great to hear that.
Yeah, I had received my certification in 2003. So I'm considered wow. a legacy member or an early adopter. But and I think some of that's driven by it's really important. Architects are lifelong learners. And with that, you also have to have a curiosity. And so through that curiosity and my personal interest in technology, I've embraced a lot of things, like the 3D printer, for example. I bought it so I could have something to play with. I wasn't sure exactly how I'd incorporate it, but, I made it an available tool that, we now incorporate and use. But that's part of it, is to actually try to find, something that's affordable, especially early on, and, have that curiosity to play with it, and then, try to figure out how you can use that to leverage the business. Some of it's even practical. I mentioned we do work for the federal government, so that kind of pulls us out of our regional position, and we do work nationally. And so we're, also doing, and that requires you're on site in another state. So that kind of also practically forced us into having look at flexible solutions for how we approach our work and where we work. So fortunately, we were already kind of cloud-based. We already had a good communication system for working remotely. And then when COVID hit, we were just very fortunate that we didn't, we were kind of already functioning that way and didn't have to adapt. But, still exploring, how to improve upon that. And sometimes it's as simple as, trying to find the right program for calendar sharing. But it's definitely been a huge benefit, and it's allowed a flexibility not only in how we service our clients, but even the framework within our own structure and how me and my personnel interact and work and are able to have a cohesive team, even though we may be remote.
And that brings us really to the next question of collaboration. Is collaboration being key in the architectural industry, especially in large scale commercial projects? And you're talking about the government projects that you have. So how are you, and you touched on this a little bit with the cloud-based and solutions and being flexible, but how are you navigating all of your collaboration challenges? And what roles, what role does effective project management play in ensuring successful outcomes?
Oh, that's a loaded question. I have lots of answers. my first thought is, how it affects our industry. And again, the computer technology, the BIM modeling tools, the evolution of codes. We've experienced historically codes were what we call prescriptively based, meaning, there's kind of like a rule of thumb and you prove that your system or your solution is meeting that rule of thumb code requirement, where now that's evolved to being more performance based. So we're leveraging computer modeling as a way of more accurately predicting building performance. And so we can use a performance standard. And now, that's becoming, you're layering a lot of complexity. And so unfortunately, that's also led to historically, we used to be able to have a single architect be able to deliver an entire building, where now we have to have a whole team, because one person just simply can't do that all. So very commonly, and also, working with scientific facilities and very complex systems within the buildings, because we have a plethora of HVAC solutions and gas piping and a lot of elements that need to be coordinated, we do wind up with a very multidisciplinary team. So, we have, the architectural role, we have a lab design role, and then we're collaborating with partners for structural, electrical, mechanical, and plumbing engineering. And, you have to work together as a cohesive team and be able to communicate and bring those things together. The 3D model works really great for that purpose as well, in which, we all, work on the same model and we share information, and that can be done in real time. And we have software where when we have a meeting and we're reviewing a project, we're all able to make notes and markups interactively at the same time. So that's super helpful for communications and coordination. So there's team collaboration on the design side, but there's the collaboration with all of the stakeholders, our clients, the contractors. For effective project management, again, sometimes the focus is using the model. Sometimes the focus is using kind of these markup kind of tools. But then we also utilize a program called projectmanager.com, and that's getting more into the project manager headspace, where we're looking at timelines and budgets and task assignments, and monitoring the project, making sure that things are being completed to the schedule and on time, and if not, and why, and what's the critical path, and making sure that that's being addressed, and ultimately making sure that that project comes together and that the client's vision is realized.
So it sounds like you are leveraging multiple technologies across the entire organization, not just in the design and execution of your project, but just working together. You talked about a team and cross-functional teams at different aspects of the project. And I just wonder, how do you keep up? How do you keep up with learning all of these technologies in your team? Because this is, that's a lot.
It is,
right?
But it didn't happen overnight. Yeah. This evolved over 30 years.
Right.
And sometimes low tech works great too. I just had a meeting this morning with a contractor where it was good old Excel spreadsheet. Okay. We have a project that's coming in over budget. All right, let's break it down. What did the costs come in at? All right, can we do a Pareto diagram and figure out, all right, where are the costs falling? What are the greatest opportunities for savings, and then generating those value engineering concepts to then make intelligent changes, not just slashing and burning on things just because you can do it in a much more focused, targeted way, and then also be able to use that to make good judgments, like, okay, if I'm altering this one thing, what other systems does it impact? And you don't want to make a change that's a detriment to some other aspect of the project, or helps you make judgment calls between options. I need to save this much. This option will get you there, or the other option will. But there's going to be factors that lead toward one option being more successful than another. And even good old Microsoft Excel works great for that kind of conversation.
Well, and I love that you say that, because I'm constantly pushing Excel onto my students, saying you will need to know this almost any industry or workplace you go into. So thank you for bringing that up. But I also you bring up being a seasoned expert, your experience and making good judgments, critically thinking through your projects. What do you think, and this is just a think question. Do you think that AI will evolve into where it could actually not replace, right, but actually help you save you some time in these steps where it can go through and help make some of those decisions and free up some more of your time so that you can be more efficient?
Yes, that's a new area of interest to me. So I'm still just playing. I still need to do my own curiosity and exploration to see how I can use that to leverage, but I do see that that's a potential that I definitely want to explore further. But I think it could be very invaluable. Again, I think a big part of a successful project is pre-planning. The more that you can kind of map out at the beginning, really helps the process proceed smoother. And I could also, again, even going to that cost estimating, I could potentially be a great cost estimating tool to help weigh some of those decisions. One of the difficult things about an architect is we don't control the cost. We do prepare estimates as part of major stages of the project, SDD and construction documents. But we're usually kind of referencing historical data. What have we done in on project other similar projects in the last 1 to 3 years, and then consider an escalation kind of factor. But that may not be the best approach, where I could see where AI might be able to give us more real-time market-driven kind of data that would be super helpful.
Right. And I love that you bring up again that curiosity and this podcast being about research. It really is synonymous with curiosity, where, the more curious you are, the more you are going to go out and look for answers and opportunities. And it sounds like this has probably been key to your success as a business owner. And so that's wonderful. And I thank you so much for sharing your insights into the commercial architectural industry, the challenges and the trends. It's been a pleasure having you here on Busy Research. If our listeners want to learn more about you and iDesign Solutions, where should they go?
So we do have a website, and that would be at www.idesign, so I the letter I DESIGN, kind of like iPod, hyphen solutions.info, like information.
Okay, and we'll include that in our show notes for sure.
Okay, much appreciated. This has really been a fun discussion. I appreciate the opportunity to share my experiences with your audience. And I wish this podcast a lot of success. I think it has a lot of potential itself. And I look forward to some other episodes where I may learn, such as your upcoming one on AI.
Well, thank you. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to another episode of Busy Research. You enjoyed this episode? Don't forget to subscribe. We'll catch you in the next episode of Busy Research. Until then, stay curious and busy.